Великой победы! Ура!
We'll be right back. How we doing, everybody? Let's get some Z's in the chat. How we doing? Thank you so much for tuning in to the stream tonight. It's good to be back. And you know what I'm going to say today is our victory day. We only get so many of these days, so many of these victory days. Today is not only another Z day, it's a V day. Today is a victory day for us because the two, the only, Andrew and Tristan Tate have been freed from their Romanian prison cells. So let's get some Z's in the chat for Andrew and Tristan Tate. The brothers have been freed from their unjust, illegal imprisonment in a Romanian prison cells since before the new year. They've been in there. So I think like late December, December 23rd-ish, around then they were imprisoned. They are now free, so get some Z's in the chat for Andrew and Tristan Tate. I don't care if you like them. I don't care if you hate them. The fact that they were in prison for as long as they were for speaking truth should be something you stand against, especially when we know who's behind it, okay? So let's get some Z's in the chat for Andrew and Tristan Tate. More on that later. Drop a like on this stream, Z in the chat, subscribe if you haven't subscribed. If you'd like to support the show, you can do so by donating to our locals, our Patreon, or our GiveSinGo linked below in the description, because YouTube has permanently demonetized my channel as a result of the truth that I tell about foreign policy, the war in Ukraine. So if you want to keep this show going, please consider donating to us there. In addition to that, if you'd like to support the show and get some amazing drip, some amazing merch, the best merch on the internet, you can do so quite easily by clicking the link that is pinned in the comment section or the link pinned in the live chat or the description below, where you can find our merch. So we have amazing Z merch, Ghost of Kiev merch, we've got Make It Ukraine Russia Again merch. It's all there, so I'm going to send the link to that in the live chat. Get your Z merch right now. Get your merch. It's good stuff. It's the best on the internet, and it goes to supporting the show. So thank you to everyone who is supporting us. And with that, we've got some pretty big news to get into tonight. We're going to be talking about the Donald Trump arrest. Yes, that's back on. He has been officially indicted, which means he will be arrested. Indications are he might even be getting a mugshot. I saw Robert Barnes tweet out that he's expecting him to get a mugshot, so we'll see what happens there. Of course, we're going to talk about the freeing of the Tate brothers, Andrew and Tristan Tate. We're going to talk about some news about EU peacekeepers being sent into Ukraine. There's apparently talks of this at the United Nations. Also, Poland is seriously preparing for war. We have more news on Poland's preparation for war against Russia. And NATO is holding war games just miles from Ukraine's border. All of that will be covered in one of our stories tonight. A U.S. spy who was posing as a journalist for the Wall Street Journal was arrested in Russia, and a Wagner op. We're going to talk about that later. And it's also pretty interesting given the news today about the arrests of Trump, Tate, all this stuff. We got some news there we're going to be jumping into. Of course, we're going to be talking about the huge news about BRICS, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa. Now BRICS Plus, because Saudi Arabia has made their formal intent to join the bloc. It looks like that BRICS has announced their formal plans to work on a new currency. That's from the deputy chairman of Russia's State Duma, Alexander Babakov. So we'll be talking a lot about BRICS tonight as well. Maybe some other news. Who knows? We have a lot to get into. I thank you all for tuning in. We've got thousands of people already watching. It's good to have you all here. Be sure to, again, drop a like. Share this stream on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Discord, Telegram, wherever you share this stuff. Be sure to do that. And yeah, you guys know where I stand. I got the former president's back, right? Take a look at this right here. I don't know if you guys saw this, but this shit goes so hard. Mr. President, I've got your back. Night Agent Hinkle has got your back. Z's in the chat for Donald Trump. You know, it's like people say, oh my God, Trump was an ally of the deep state. He killed Soleimani. He launched a coup in Bolivia. He tried to launch a coup in Venezuela. Blah, blah, blah. It's like, yeah, he did do. He appointed Bolton. He appointed Pompeo, all these people. He, you know, started the extradition against it. Yeah, he did a bunch of bad stuff. But like at the end of his presidency, he woke up to the insanity of it all. And the people were there screwing him over. And I still don't trust him. I still don't trust Trump. But like He is the only hope. Why do you think that they're banning him on social media? Why do you think that they are they're going to arrest him? Why do you think that they impeached him twice? He is the only president that's been banned from social media, that's been arrested, that's, you know, had this formal indictment, that's been impeached twice, that was going to be actually impeached and removed from office if he went through with the pardon for Assange and Snowden, because that was the threats that Mitch McConnell levied at him. Why do you think they do all this? Why do you think that they do all this? It's quite simple. He poses some ounce of a threat to the deep state. Not even a large one, but an ounce of a threat to the deep state, and they go this hard against him, you know? That's why. So, anyways, thank you all for tuning in. I say we get started with the news today. Another day broadcasting from Indonesia, but my question to all of you tuning in, the thousands watching, where are you tuning in from today? Let's see it in the live chat. Roll call. Where is everyone tuning in from? I see we already have Toronto, Ontario, in the live chat. We got Ontario in the live chat. Who else we got tuning in? Let's see it in the live chat. Where's everyone tuning in from? We got Ireland in the live chat. We've got, who else we got? We have got live chat's a little slow. Texas, we've got Michigan, we've got Norway, we've got Alaska, Australia, Nova Scotia, Bangladesh, we've got Saudi Arabia, El Salvador, we've got Serbia, we've got Canada, we've got Siberia. Interesting. Very interesting. We've got Russia. We've got Los Angeles. Who else we got in the live chat? Switzerland, Yemen, UK, Sydney. We've got Philippines, Malaysia, Queensland, Mexico, Nigeria, Montreal. Who else we got in the live chat? Let's see it. We've got Yemen. We've got Utah, Texas, Poland, Mississippi, Hawaii. Let's do a few more here in the live chat. Roll call, roll call. We've got... live chat's moving too fast. France. We've got Algeria, Lebanon, Indiana, Ghana, Beijing, Kosovo, Morocco, Yugoslavia, Romania. And we've got... let's do three more. Afghanistan. We've got... Hungary and Ireland. Okay, it's good to have all of you in the live chat. Salute to all of you Z's in the chat. Let's get started with the first story of the day. All right, so let's get started here. Let's talk about the EU peacekeepers. I find it a bit ironic that the single group of individuals that might just start World War III officially... our group of individuals called peacekeepers. Yeah. The European Union is discussing the idea of sending in EU peacekeepers to Ukraine to quell the violence, the chaos, the bloodshed. I don't know, because the truth is, the fact of the matter is, if they send in peacekeepers to Ukraine, that almost EU peacekeepers, that almost guarantees that we're going to have World War III. It almost guarantees that. And Hungary is saying, you know, they've been discussing, like, yeah, we're pretty concerned. Top Hungarian officials, we're pretty concerned about the threat of World War III right now. We're pretty concerned that this is where this is headed. You know, there's been a lot of debate, a lot of deliberation. Is this World War III? Is this going to go to World War III? Hungarian officials have come out today and they said, yeah, we're pretty concerned that this is headed towards World War III. That's what it looks like to us. So, you know, we'll see where this goes. No one can predict the future. But it does appear that this is where we are headed. Okay, so let's take a look at this. Apparently, there is serious talk of EU troops, peacekeepers, if you will, in Ukraine. And the Kremlin is saying this is extremely dangerous. Moscow has raised concerns over Hungarian PM's claims that the bloc is set to discuss sending some kind of force into Ukraine. Any ideas about a possible deployment of EU forces in Ukraine are potentially very dangerous. This is what Kremlin spokesperson Dmitry Peskov has warned in response to comments made by Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban on Friday. If we are talking about sending some kind of serious negotiations, then this is a potentially extremely dangerous discussion. In world practice, such forces, as a rule, are used only with the consent of both parties, meaning that you would have to have the consent of Russia, the consent of Ukraine, and the consent of the EU. In this case, it is potentially a very dangerous topic, Peskov told journalists. His statement comes after Orban revealed that EU leaders are close to holding a legitimate discussion on whether or not member states can or should send some kind of peacekeeping force to Ukraine despite a probable rebuke from Russia. And if you have a military rebuke from Russia that targets those peacekeepers, then that is, you know, that's the violation of Article 5, and that means you're going to have World War III, okay? The Hungarian leader warned that the Ukrainian conflict is only getting bloodier and more brutal and questioned why EU leaders are not focused on trying to achieve peace through diplomatic means rather than the provision of more deadly tools to Kiev and the fueling of hostilities. Quote, if this continues, the danger of a world war is not a literary exaggeration, the Prime Minister of Hungary has now said. Okay. And yeah, I'd say that, yeah, that does happen. This is pretty much a guarantee that we're going to be at World War III very soon. Okay. The only Dmitry Medvedev has come out and said that these peacekeepers, you know, will be wolves in sheep's clothing. They'll be combatants and return in body bags, okay? Any EU peacekeepers sent to the Ukraine will be considered enemy combatants directly involved in the conflict and treated accordingly. Former Russian President Dmitry Medvedev said on Friday. Earlier in the day, Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban said in a radio address that the bloc was discussing some kind of peacekeeping force. And by the way, it should be noted that Russia has just labeled Hungary as a member of the list of unfriendly countries to Russia, so that's worth noting here. Medvedev, who is the deputy chair of the Russian Security Council, called the idea peak cynicism. The U.S.-led bloc continues to stuff the Kiev regime with weapons, tanks, and other military equipment, okay, he said on Telegram. So it's hard to imagine they want peace. The true intentions are clear. To establish a peace advantageous to them from a position of strength on the contact line. To introduce their peacekeeping troops into Ukraine with machine guns and tanks and some blue helmets with yellow stars, wrote Medvedev. It is clear that the so-called NATO peacekeepers are just going to enter the conflict on the side of our enemies. It's also obvious that such peacemakers are our direct enemies. Wolves in sheep's clothing. They will be a legitimate target for our armed forces if they are placed on the front line without Russia's consent, with weapons in their hands, and directly threatening us. And then these peacekeepers must be ruthlessly destroyed. They are soldiers of the enemy. They are combatants. Okay. And they'll go back home in body bags. That's from Dmitry Medvedev. So clearly they are not playing around whatsoever. Not only that, but Poland is furthering their preparations for war. We know they're taking their military from 150,000 men to 300,000 men, and they are drastically increasing their military spending. But now we have this as well. According to Polish media, Poland is building up its anti-aircraft and anti-missile capabilities. This is according to the Minister of National Defense, Mariusz Błaszczak. So my question would be, if you're not preparing for war, why would you be doing all of this? If you're not preparing for war with Russia, why would you be doing all of this? And I think it's clear why they're doing all of this. The top U.S. general, Mark Milley, has come out and said that he's skeptical of Ukraine's prospects in a counteroffensive. Okay, Ukraine's stated objective of expelling all Russian invaders is unlikely to be achieved this year. This is like the fifth time he's come out and said this. General Mark Milley, chairman of the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff, said in an interview on Friday. His comments came as Kiev both announced a grand spring offensive and complained about not having all the weapons needed for it. President Volodymyr Zelensky said that Ukraine's objective to kick every Russian out of Russian-occupied Ukraine is probably a very, very difficult military task, okay? I'm not saying it can't be done. I don't think it's likely to be done in the near term or this year, okay? So given that he doesn't think that this is possible, and given that it's official U.S. deep state policy that this is what they want to do, Well, you're going to need to have some backup. You're going to have EU peacemakers come in. You're going to have, you know, Poland prepare for war. It's quite obvious, I think, where this is headed if Ukraine can't achieve the goal on their own. All right. Not only that, but NATO is now holding war games just miles from Ukraine's border. The U.S. and its NATO partners are conducting military drills in a region of Romania. Oh, Romania, the country that just imprisoned Andrew Tate for 5 months on end for speaking truth to the masses, specifically to young men of military age, about the war in Ukraine and about the globalist policies for World War III. Romania. They're conducting military drills in a region of Romania that borders Ukraine. Thousands of soldiers will gather to simulate repelling an invasion on the Black Sea coastline. Dubbed Sea Shield 23, the war games kicked off on March 20th and will run until April 2nd. The U.S. and 11 other NATO countries are participating in the Romanian-led military exercises. Nearly 3,500 soldiers, 30 naval ships, 14 aircraft, and 15 other fast intervention boats are participating in the live-fire operations, which will occur in the Black Sea and Romania's Danube Delta. Troops taking part in the Sea Shield drills will come within 20 miles of the Ukrainian border. The multinational exercise, Sea Shield 2023, is the most complex training event planned and conducted by the Romanian Naval Forces through the Naval Component Command in the training year of 2023, the Romanian Navy said in a press release. Okay, so again, the writing's on the wall. So where this is headed, the writing is on the wall, whether it's Romania, whether it's Poland, whether it's EU peacekeepers, regardless of who it is. The writing is on the wall. They want to counter Russia and Russia's new foreign policy doctrine, which was just announced yesterday by Vladimir Putin. And the key points of this new foreign policy doctrine that had to be updated because of the prevailing threats of the West are as follows. Number one, the major threat to international peace. Okay, the updated foreign policy doctrine labels the aggressive anti-Russian policy of the U.S. and its allies as a major risk to Russia's security, as well as to international peace and the development of just and balanced future for humanity. Number two, relations with the West. Moscow does not treat the U.S. and its allies as adversaries, despite recognizing the threat posed by their policies, the new concept maintains. It adds that Russia does not consider itself to be an enemy of the West. It is not isolating itself from the West and has no hostile intentions with regard to it. Number three, equality for all nations. Russia is seeking to build a system of international relations based on reliable security guarantees and equal opportunities for all nations, regardless of their size, geographical location, or military power. Number four, key allies. Moscow believes the deeper cooperation with sovereign global centers of power, such as China, BRICS nations, SCO nations, China and India, will be of significant importance for its foreign policy, according to the new paper. In particular, Russia will see comprehensive partnership and strategic cooperation in areas with Beijing and a privileged strategic partnership with New Delhi. And number five, global and regional cooperation. Moscow believes it can find friends and reliable partners all over the world. The updated doctrine states, Russia particularly considers Islamic civilization to be friendly and believes that the Islamic world has great prospects and can become an independent and influential power in the polycentric world. It seeks to develop cooperation with all major regional actors, including Iran, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and others. Okay, Russia also stands in solidarity with Africa and its desire to occupy a more prominent place in the world and eliminate inequality used by the neocolonial policies of some developed states. Okay, in Latin America, Russia aims to develop relations on a pragmatic, de-ideologized, and mutually beneficial basis, as well as strengthen the existing friendly ties with such nations as Brazil, Cuba, and Venezuela. Okay, so all around, you know, the West is taking major foreign policy L's, and Russia, again, is winning in very, very big ways. All right. Thank you all for tuning in. We got more big news on the way, so stick around. Appreciate you all tuning in on Rumble, everyone tuning in on YouTube. It's good to have all of you here. Be sure to drop a like on the stream, subscribe to the stream, and drop a Z in the live chat if you haven't done so yet. And let's get into the next story. Let's talk about this right here. It's no secret that China and Russia have completely altered history over the past 12 months. Whether it's Ukraine-Russia relations, tensions, and war, whether it's Chinese and Taiwan relations, whether it's the ever-changing multipolar world, whether it's BRICS, whether it's the SEO, it's a certainty that China and Russia have effectively altogether changed the course of human history for the better, I would argue, over the past 12 months. The most recent development that we have witnessed, and I've witnessed with, you know, a gaping jaw as I see this unfold, are the developments in the Middle East. The strategic manufactured divides in the Middle East over the past 20, 30 years have resulted in an untold amount of bloodshed, loss of life, human suffering, and again, manufactured divisions between countries like Syria, Saudi Arabia, Iran, Yemen, the UAE, you could go on and on and on, right? Israel, fake country. You could go on and on and on with all these countries, right? And it seems as though for the first time, China and Russia are beginning to put the final pieces of this great Middle East puzzle into place. If you don't know what I'm talking about, take a look at this news right here. Arab nations look to make deal on Syria reconstruction and normalization, okay? This includes Saudi Arabia. This includes the UAE, which is really quite something if you know the previous years of warfare that has broken out, and which Saudi Arabia and the UAE have taken a definitive side on, okay? Saudi Arabia and Syria have agreed to restore ties now. The reported development comes after Riyadh signed a similar deal with Tehran. So Saudi Arabia just a few weeks ago signed a deal with Iran through China saying we want peace. Now Saudi Arabia is saying, yeah, let's have peace with Syria. Why not? Saudi Arabia says arms sales. U.S. senators propose resolution that could derail exports to Riyadh. So the U.S. is they're responding with this backlash. The Biden administration saying we're not going to give or sell any more arms to Riyadh if they continue down along this path. And Saudi Arabia responded by saying, well, if you do that, we're going to join BRICS. So Saudi Arabia says they're going to be joining BRICS Plus in August. That effectively kills the petrodollar. Bye-bye petrodollar. In addition to that, Saudi Arabia has moved towards another Russia-China bloc. The kingdom has approved partner status in the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. King Salman bin Abdulaziz Al Suad has signed documents granting Saudi Arabia the status of dialogue partner with the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, the political, economic, and security bloc currently chaired by China, which is huge. Again, goodbye petrodollar. Not only that, but the UAE has welcomed Syria into the greater Arab family, says it's time for Syria to return to their Arab family. Let's take a look at this video right here. To the people of Syria, it's been far too long, says the UAE, and you have been missed. It's time for the Syrians to return to their Arab family. There's Assad, the UAE leaders. It is our aim to build relations with you. We wish to extend and strengthen the bridges between us and the people of Syria for the benefit of both sides.
May
God bless you and the people of
Syria.
Now, what's incredible about this is, like, just think about how many different times they tried to kill Assad, tried to destabilize his country, regime change his ass, coup his ass, remove him from power, topple the entire economy of Syria, wage an 8-year dirty war, plant fake gas chemical attacks on Assad's regime, airstrike the Assad government and the people of Syria. They did anything and everything they could, and Assad stood tall, refused to bend the knee. I mean, they occupy and still are occupying 1/3 of Syria, and it's the quote-unquote hydrocarbon-rich region and the agricultural-rich region of Syria. They're stealing their oil, they're stealing their wheat, and Assad stood tall in the face of it all, and now he has reigned victorious. He's having peace deals with Saudi Arabia, peace deals with the UAE. They're rebuilding Syria. They are going to reconstruct Syria. They're going to normalize tensions with Syria. And Syria is again welcomed into the broader Arab family yet again. Okay, so it's absolutely incredible what is happening right now in the Middle East. And that is still not all. Okay, yes, amazing things happening in the Middle East. The UAE is normalizing relations with Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, his beautiful and smart wife Asma also accompanied him on their trip to the UAE. After a decade of brutal civil wars, proxy wars, and religious wars, Arab leaders had an epiphany. Quote, hey, how about we cooperate with one another and find win-win ideas for peace and prosperity? You love to see it. And, the UN even is still denying and refusing the allegations of U.S. warmongering and proxy warfare in Syria. Take a look at this video right here. This is amazing.
Do you think the presence of the U.S. military in Syria is illegal or not?
That's not an issue that we're dealing with at this stage. There's been a war.
But it sounds very familiar. This week we talk a lot about the UN Charter, the international law, and relative resolutions. But it sounds to me a foreign presence, foreign military based presence in another country without invitation, sounds like something else to me. You know.
I'll leave your analysis to you. At this stage,
what's the difference the situation in Syria and the situation in Ukraine?
There's no U.S. armed forces inside of Syria, and so I don't have a. It's not a parallel situation.
You're sure there's no U.S. military personnel.
I believe there's military activity.
Yeah,
but in terms of ground presence in Syria, I'm not aware of that.
Okay, 5 U.S. service members were injured in that attack. If there were no U.S. soldier service members in Syria, how could they got injured?
As far as I'm concerned, there's no U.S. soldiers in Syria. There's just some military activity. There's no U.S. soldiers in Syria. So, sir, if there's no U.S. soldiers in Syria, how did 5 U.S. soldiers just get injured in a attack in Syria that you just mentioned?
In Syria, I'm not aware of that.
Okay, 5 U.S. service members were injured in that attack. If there were no U.S. soldier service members in Syria, how could they got injured? That's weird, right? Should I ask you about that?
These are the people that they're employing at, like, the highest positions of global governance at the United Nations. Holding a press conference about international community, we'd like to come together today on this solemn day. 5 U.S. soldiers were just injured in an airstrike in Syria. And this is very, very tough news to come and discuss with all of you today. Excuse me, sir. So Why do you support, why do you think this is okay? It's not hypocritical that you speak about all of this nonsense in Ukraine, but then you don't speak anything negatively about the U.S. troop presence in Syria? Well, there is no U.S. troop presence in Syria. But, sir, didn't you just say that five U.S. soldiers were injured in an airstrike in Syria? They didn't prepare me for this question at Harvard. Absolute fucking idiots. These people are so stupid. These people are so stupid. No wonder the Chinese and the Russians are replacing the petrodollar and all this like Western hegemonic bullshit, because those are the types of people they have in power. Like, if I was in power, I would do a much better job at preserving Western hegemony if I cared about that. I don't care about that. But like, you could take someone with absolutely no experience in governance, Trump, for example, and he would do like a thousand times better job than these globalist liberal shills they have in power right now at maintaining Western. I don't even care about Western hegemony, and I would do a better job at preserving it than them by simply not pissing off the Chinese. Why am I even going to list this? You list every country on the face of the planet, we piss them off. Whether they're still under our thumb or not doesn't really matter. But there you have it. So no wonder that China and Brazil just announced that they have a deal that's going to be serving a major blow to the United States dollar. Ditching the American currency in trade will diminish Washington's ability to impose its will. China and Brazil have secured a deal to conduct bilateral trade in their own respective currencies, eliminating the U.S. dollar as an intermediary. The agreement between the BRICS countries, which have about $150 billion in annual trade, would probably have been signed in Beijing this week had Brazilian President Lula... agreement between two BRICS countries... So is it not... Is it not signed? So this is very interesting. China and Brazil have secured a deal. So how have they secured the deal if it wasn't signed? Brazil and China signed pact to abandon the two. Beijing and Brazil have signed an agreement on trade and mutual currencies, abandoning the U.S. According to media reports, the deal will enable the two BRICS members to conduct their massive trade finance transactions directly exchanging renminbi for real and vice versa, instead of using the U.S. dollar for settlements. The expectation is that this will reduce costs, promote even greater bilateral trade. So have they signed it yet? So I'm not going to lie, I don't trust Lula one fucking ounce. So Lula went over there saying that, I'm thinking about Brazil joining the Belt and Road Initiative. So this is why I don't trust Lula at all. So Lula gets into power and he immediately condemns Russia's special military operation in Ukraine. And I get it. He's also done some other stuff. Like he said, like he's been kind of neutral. He said, I'm not going to supply arms to Ukraine. But he also was the only BRICS leader to ever have condemned Russia's special military operation. He did do that. Then he goes to China and says that I'm going to do this whole peace club thing with China about the Ukraine war. Did he do that? I haven't seen any news about that. Okay, then he said, I'm thinking about getting Brazil into the Belt and Road Initiative. Did he do that? No, he didn't. I haven't seen anyone talk about that. No, he didn't. He didn't do that. And then he said, well, I'm going to do this this yuan, Brazil-China deal and get rid of U.S. dollar as an intermediary in all our trade. But now they're saying the deal hasn't even been signed yet. So they're intending on the deal being signed, but the visit was not done because of Lula's illness. I don't know. I don't trust any of this stuff. Seems very fishy to me. Lula is very fishy. I don't trust him at all. Anyways, but that's a good development, I guess. It's a step in the right direction, but I'll just say I'll believe it when I see it because it's not done yet. So Anyways, but that's not all. We also have this as well. The ASEAN finance ministers and central banks consider dropping U.S. dollar, euro, and yen. Indonesian government calls for phasing out Visa and MasterCard. So that's a huge development. On an official meeting of ASEAN finance ministers and central bank governors kicked off on Tuesday in Indonesia, where I am right now, top of the agenda are discussions to reduce dependence on the US dollar, euro, yen, and British pound from financial transactions and move to settlements in local currencies. The meeting discussed efforts to reduce, and people forget how large of a country Indonesia is, by the way. I mean, there's like, there are a fuck ton of people here. I think it's like, isn't it like 250 plus million people here? I think it's like, there's like 256 million people. Let me double check Indonesia's population. I mean, this is a huge country. Indonesia population. 273 million people in Indonesia. Okay, and what countries are in ASEAN? So you've got Brunei, Cambodia, Indonesia, Laos, Malaysia, Myanmar, Philippines, Singapore, Thailand, and Vietnam. Okay, so that's a huge, huge economic block. That is a huge economic block. And they're talking about phasing out Visa and MasterCard and also doing all trade in local currencies, okay? And believe me, they need it. I mean, in Indonesia right now, the Indonesian rupiah, which is their currency here, it's like $6.60 USD is equal to, I think that's equal to like 100,000 Indonesian rupiah. It's insane, the level of inflation here. Indonesian President Joko Widodo has urged regional administrations to start using credit cards issued by local banks and gradually stop using foreign payment systems. He argued that Indonesia needed to shield itself from geopolitical disruption, citing the sanctions targeting Russia's financial sector from the US, EU, and their allies over the conflict in Ukraine. Okay, so I'd imagine that these ASEAN nations will eventually be moving towards the Chinese alternative to SWIFT, I'd imagine. Here's a look at the great transfer of wealth in yuan and use of yuan over the past few years. You have all these insane idiots like Peter Zeihan claiming that nobody wants to use the yuan. Yet in 2021, cross-border yuan settlements amounted to a whopping 36 trillion yuan, equivalent to $5.6 trillion USD. That is bigger than the GDP of Germany and Japan. Technology and geopolitics will make reserve currency pretty much obsolete. The post-dollar world will be primarily just-in-time transactions using local currencies. Okay, furthermore, we have this. Western media is having a fit over Chinese ambassador to the EU saying the obvious, that Europe needs China. But maybe they should consider these simple facts. China-EU trade is $1 trillion plus a year. China is the number one goods partner of the EU. The EU gets 98% of their lithium and rare earth minerals from China. For large German companies like VW, BASF, Siemens and BMW, China is the number one market in terms of revenue. After cutting themselves off from Russia, will Europeans want to decouple from China? I would think that would be pretty stupid. And this is why we're now going to lead into the main part of this story right here. This is the big news we have today from the Russians. This is earth-shattering, history-changing, history-altering news. BRICS is officially working on a new currency. This is from the deputy chairman of Russia's State Duma, Alexander Babakov. Details will be presented at the upcoming BRICS summit in South Africa. The currency will be backed by gold and other commodities, likely oil and lithium. However, it is not going to happen immediately. The step before that would be enabling trade in local currencies of BRICS members, including many new ones like Saudi Arabia, Iran, and likely Nigeria. There you have it, folks. And how does the U.S. respond? How does the West respond? By more sanctions on Russia, more sanctions on adversarial nations, more sanctions and regime change and coup attempts on Turkey and Saudi Arabia, by saying that we might go to war with Iran. Yes, now, General Mark Milley, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff of the U.S., is saying that that the United States should attack Iran's Quds forces, which will effectively, bring us to war against the IRGC. The Biden administration has come out and said that he plans to maintain our U.S. troop presence in Syria and continue the airstrikes, which have increased in rates over the past week, 2 weeks. So we're going to maintain our presence in Syria, maintain our presence in Iran. But, you know, I don't really see anything going well for them in the near future. I see, if anything, all their efforts just blowing up right in their faces as the rest of the world begins to consolidate behind Russia and China, their new currencies, their new economic blocks like the SEO, like BRICS, and their military blocks as well. All right, so huge news there. New currency just underway by these nations. Big stuff, big stuff. All right. On that note, let's get into the next story. Be sure to drop a like on this stream, folks. Subscribe if you haven't subscribed yet, and if you'd like to support the show, as always, you can do so by donating to our program on Locals, Patreon, or GiveSendGo using the links below in the description, or by grabbing our super hot merch, our best merch on the internet, our Z merch, Make Ukraine Russia Again merch, and our Ghost of Kiev merch. It's all there now. Get it while you still can at gearbubble.com /Jackson or Jackson Hinkle or something. Go grab it right now. The link is in the description and in the live chat. Get your merch right now. All right. Let's talk about this. So, in recent decades, the United States has not been known for the clandestine capabilities and, specialties of our intelligence programs. Yeah. We are the ones who usually get caught doing this sort of stuff, whereas China and Russia, mostly China, have been able to clearly and, successfully carry out their intelligence operations without being caught. I mean, we've literally had U.S. Congressmen get caught sleeping with Chinese spies, and they've likely been, they've been held to do something. I don't know what happens when you get caught sleeping with a Chinese spy. I don't know what happens, but Congressman, what was that guy's name? He ran for president for a brief stint, I think. California congressman, I think, got caught sleeping with a Chinese spy. But anyways, the U.S. is not really, I mean, like, you look at people like Michael McFaul, they're not the brightest of the bright. So can you really blame them when they get caught in these subversive activities? I don't think so. I mean, what else did you expect? What else did you expect? Now we have news that a Wall Street Journal reporter was arrested in Russia on suspicion of espionage. This is according to the FSB. His name is Evan Gershkovich, and he was detained in Russia for allegedly trying to obtain state secrets. A correspondent working for the Wall Street Journal in Russia has been arrested in the city of Ekaterinburg in the Urals, the FSB Security Service announced on Thursday. Evan Gershkovich, who previously worked for the Moscow Times and AFP in the Russian capital, has been accused of trying to collect intelligence about a defense industry factory in violation of Russia's laws on state secrets, the statement said. It charged him with espionage. The journalist could face between 10 to 20 years in prison. The FSB alleges that Gershkovich, a U.S. citizen who has accreditation from the foreign ministry to work in Russia, acted in the interest of the U.S. government when he sought to obtain classified information. He was arrested during an attempt to receive the intelligence, the statement added. The Wall Street Journal is deeply concerned for the safety of Mr. Gershkovich. I can't say his name. The outlet said in a statement. Okay, let's take a look at this video.
Well, what we do know is that this was the correspondent for Wall Street Journal, the Moscow bureau of Wall Street Journal. And according to the statement by Russia's Federal Security Service, he was detained in the city of Yekaterinburg while he was trying to obtain secret information. Since then, they've opened a criminal case against him on charges of espionage. Now, if he's convicted on those charges, he could face up to 20 years in prison, but there's still a long time before that. There are so many question marks regarding this case, how it happened, what sort of secret information was he trying to obtain, because we do know that it relates to one of the enterprises of the Russian military-industrial complex, but we don't have any more details. We know that he's 32 years old. He's previously worked for the Moscow Times, Agence France-Presse, and he's the main topic seems to be Russia, Ukraine, and former Soviet Union states. So that's his specialty. And he was in the city of Yekaterinburg for a few days. We don't know many details about his activities, but obviously it was deemed suspicious by Russia's Federal Security Service. And they have proof that he was spying on behalf of the American government. That's according to their statements. And of course, we've known before of diplomats, of course, being used as spies before, but now with journalists, and especially with the situation we're in. Just recently, we had the U.S. drones flying over what Russia said is a no-fly zone, intelligence gathering. And we know that Americans are not only helping Ukrainians when it comes to money, but military aid as well, but also when it comes to intelligence. So this is all very sensitive information right now.
So another news and another way to say this is that the American intelligence absolutely fucking sucks. This guy is, he probably rode on the short bus to school and he got sent off to Moscow to do this job that I don't think many people would really want. I think you'd have to be pretty insane at this late stage to want to be a spy for the U.S. located in Russia. Now there's not a lot of good things that go along with that. And he got caught.